Welcome back to You Can With AI Season 2. I'm Nathaniel Whittemore, host of the AI Daily Brief and partner with KPMG on You Can With AI. Since Season 1, things have changed quite a bit with AI. Around the end of last year and the beginning of this year, both the models we have access to and the harnesses through which we use them took a major leap forward in capability. As a result, not only has software engineering changed, but to some extent, everyone is a software engineer now. What's more, it turns out that AI getting good at coding isn't just transformative for software engineers, but unlocks a huge array of other use cases as well. Along with increased coding capabilities has come real agentic capability across the expanse of knowledge work. And yet, even as these capacities take hold and dominate not just technology, but market narratives as well, enterprises continue to struggle to keep up. The capability overhang, in other words, the space between what AI can do and what we are actually getting out of it, continues to grow larger. But not for everyone. In fact, one of the things that's happening right now is that the gap between the leaders and the laggards is getting bigger than it's ever been. Which brings us to You Can With AI. The first season was a tight package of episodes designed to give you a primer in many of the issues that enterprises were dealing with as they went about their AI transformation. What this season shares with Season 1 is a bent towards the practical. It'll be all about on-the-ground insights from leaders and companies who have worked their way through some of the key challenges of enterprise AI adoption. 2026 is, in short, a big year for enterprise AI, and with You Can With AI, you will be in a much better position to thrive. Now, with all that said, let's get into our first episode. Today's conversation is with Stephen Chase, KPMG's Global Head of AI and Digital Innovation, along with Rob Fisher, Vice Chair of Advisory at KPMG US. We're introducing the big themes that will define this entire season and getting a status report from the ground view of the state of enterprise AI transformation. All right, gentlemen, welcome back to Season 2 of You Can With AI. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing?
It's awesome, Nathaniel. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, listen, I think this is a little bit different than Season 1. Season 1 was about sort of a package of shows designed to help folks in the enterprise or just in business in general who are thinking about AI get up to speed fast. It was kind of a wide-ranging survey of different topics that are relevant. And Season 2, I think, shares the same practical bent, right? This is about discussions that are useful and will turn into actionable ideas, hopefully. The difference is that we're now kind of moving into the realm of very fast and rapid change. And I think that's the big characteristic of 2026 so far is this feeling of acceleration. And so this season will be a little bit different in terms of how we approach that, but hopefully with that same practical bent. And with that in mind, where I wanted to start, and maybe Steve, I'll start with you, is just what you guys are hearing on the ground. You know, for me, almost every show on the AI Daily Brief this year has been some version of, wow, things changed around the end of last year, and it feels like it's moving faster than we thought. Is that your experience inside KPMG? Is that your experience with clients? What's the sort of nuance that, you know, outside of the Twitter conversation that I'm living in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. Absolutely, amongst the people who are in it with AI, it's a feeling that we're on a new S curve. And the other one was really steep and fast. So this one like is like kind of caught even people who were in it, I think, a little, not by surprise, but just how much better it is. And then the question is I think in behind your question is, then how's that diffusing into these organizations? And like, are they really speeding up? And you know, that's a mixed bag. I have said, and you and I have talked about that leaders are breaking away from leaders right now, right? The real leaders in the pack, the things that they're doing are making folks in their same industry scratch their head. Well, I'm a regulated industry. I can't do that. And then you see some big announcement from another company and then you look behind what they're doing. They really are moving quite quickly. So Nathaniel, one of the things we're talking to our clients about is what was good enough isn't good enough right now. And actually, there's a lot of frustration building in organizations where the makers or the builders have better tools at home than they have access to at work. You know what that leads to? We've done a number of studies about that. That means that you start to get a lot of offline use, which we, you know, pretty evident in the beginning of this wave. I just had a meeting with a group of chief AI officers at a bunch of different regulated industries and not. And we were talking about exactly this topic and the amount of pressure they're feeling to go faster, but also a bit of a sigh, sort of like, oh my goodness, like what's coming tomorrow? You know, like staying up with it, the cognitive load behind it, the amount of process change that needs to happen, and concern about some of the things that we're doing are brand new and bring with them a lot of risk. And you got to be really careful that you have the right guardrails in place also to be able to move as quickly as you feel like the market's moving and your people want you to move. Tough balance right now. The leaders are figuring that out. And that creates material competitive risk inside sectors and whatnot.
Hey, Steve, maybe I'll just add like the thing of like the dispersion. Like, I just can't even believe how wide it feels right now. Like, nothing I can ever remember. I can go to one client and we're literally building a custom loan system, you know, leveraging some AI tools that we have powered by some of the leading models. And, you know, that we're doing it at, you know, call it 15, 20% of the cost of what it would have taken them to implement a traditional leading package. They wanted to get into the business. They're like, hey, let's just build it from scratch, right? And then, you know, right down the street, you'll have a client is like still debating whether to turn on Copilot. I mean, it is so right. Dispersed. And like, we need to meet all those clients where they are. I mean, it's really a wild time in terms of how do you serve those two ends of the market, right? Like, so I can't ever remember a time quite like this where clients are so far apart in where they are on their journeys.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to pick up from that you mentioned, Stephen, is something that I think about a lot is the idea that there's always been a capability overhang. I mean, there's a capability overhang for the most advanced users of AI. I feel a capability overhang, and it's my job to use this stuff every single day. But the capability overhang in the enterprise, I think, you know, has been more consistent, more profound. It's something that we've talked about throughout. What feels different now is that because of the most recent capabilities jump, this shift to the new S-curve that you mentioned, you now have a wider divergence in what that looks like from organizations that are lagging to organizations that are leading. And I think one thing that's really interesting that you mentioned is that part of that is that the types of things that you can do are really different and new. It's not just your old job plus Copilot. It's something fundamentally different. Speak a little bit more, if you could, about that leader-lagger gap and sort of, you know, how organizations are, does anyone kind of recognize where they are in that spectrum? Or is everyone kind of flying blind relative to where they are with their peers? You know, does everyone feel behind even though some are ahead? I think it's a really pertinent question, if only for the fact that I do kind of feel like at some points over the last couple of years, organizations have felt like it's okay to be behind because everyone of all of their peers are behind in similar ways.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, Rob talked about that, the disparity or the distance between the top of the charts and the, you know, and you can go sector by sector by sector and see that. And you walk into a company that is like really retooling and they're doing that at pace. And you go to another one that's down the street and they're in the same sector and they're like, you know, we're not sure about it. I mean, this is another thing that's just going to pass. I'm really concerned. It's not, you can't put your arm around them and tell them it's going to be okay. Like, and that same thing is happening within organizations, divisions or parts of the organization moving faster than others, you know, but there are parts of the organization that are quite terrorized by that as well, like the cyber organization and the threats that come around, which are legitimate, absolute risks. So you've got to, if I've got a better capability for that, then I'm going to be able to lean into this. But it's a business imperative, Nathaniel, for the company that says, is willing to take that opportunity and say, I'm going to rethink the process entirely. Rob gave an example about a loan system build, but you know, we're working with another client where we're helping them reimagine their offshore capability centers, how they'll bring those back onshore and bring as few resources back with that as possible. And improve the experience and do it at pace, right? Or another is like a spin-off organization that's saying, hey, I can't be competitive unless I change the way I do everything because of, you know, what the spin-off is a lower margin business, thinking about being AI first and agentic first. And somebody in their same sector thinking, well, hey, this doesn't really apply to me. I think it's a great opportunity for organizations like KPMG, frankly, that are actually built for this moment to help. This isn't a technology problem so much. The technology is really hard, but the technology is getting better and better. It's business transformation at scale.
Rob, does that resonate with what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I think it is interesting. I would just maybe add on Steve's example, because I've been pretty close to the one with that. I find spinoffs to be a really interesting place right now because they're these scaled companies but they need to, you know, traditionally you would just take a cut of the old systems and stand them up. But you have this like moment where you can actually reimagine and say, okay, like what does an AI native version of this business look like? Now go back to the legacy company. That's so much harder because you have all this overhang, if you will. It, you know, disrupting yourself tends to be much more incremental, right? It's like, okay, we have a 10-step process and we're identifying steps 2, 3, and 7. It's really hard for those companies to step out and say, hang on a sec, throw steps 1 through 10 out the window and let's just completely reimagine that. And so, you know, how you do that, I think, is tricky, you know, for ourselves even. We're experimenting with kind of EdgeCo concepts, right? We'll just take people, like put them in a separate part of the business and say, just go completely reimagine how we might do an audit, for example, and say, okay, don't worry about the regulatory constraints. Just go reimagine it and then bring back what you got. And then let's see, you know, is that something we could scale and look at? So I think it takes those kind of out of the box approaches to be able to disrupt when you are, you know, you're an incumbency that has just a massive amount of legacy technology, infrastructure, process, people mindset, and so on.
You know, Nathaniel, if I could, I was talking about business transformation. This issue that we're sort of struggling with is the innovator's dilemma, right? Like enterprises are built for scale, right? Like they're, that's one of their advantages. They build repeatable processes that are high quality. And now you got this disruption comes in that sort of upturns the apple cart and it's risky, right? And so enterprises are built like they're built to sort of resist some of those things at times, but, and yet, that thing that preserves them is also the thing that puts them at risk. So I've been telling, you know, I talk to leaders all the time. You brought up the point about that I bring up to them, which is this is very different than the augmentation phase. This is, we need to be thinking about the process completely different with almost an abundance mindset. Like here's an example, forecasting. The build of a forecast in an organization takes tons of people, takes time to get to. By the time it gets there, how many real decisions get made based on that forecast and the way it's forecasted, right? Shouldn't we be able to make that as a flow-through process with no people building the forecast using deterministic AI and generative AI to come together with this forecast that we spend all our time on the analysis phase? The humans are like doing that part of it. It takes a leader to lean into that and make that happen, be willing to experiment, and to be able to put their people in that sort of a spot. And I think the other thing, if you haven't used it, it's really hard to even imagine how good it is, right? And so if you haven't actually touched the tools, you're sort of like talking about riding a bike, but you've never ridden one before.
Yeah. Do you think that there's more of an acceptance or awareness of this idea that this is a business transformation problem rather than just sort of like a vendor selection problem or something like that? Has that grown, you know, coming into this year?
I mean, I would say yes, but not enough. I mean, you know, I'm going to steal Steve's line. I've heard him use it a couple times now, but you know, for every dollar that you spend on the technology, you ought to be spending a dollar on the human transformation, the workforce transformation that needs to occur to make sure your people can come along the journey. And I think like that's not what we're seeing right now. Instead, you sort of still in too many organizations, you see kind of like a peppering of pilots that are happening. You know, that leads to other problems like a lack of ability to orchestrate everything you're doing. But it's like, you're just sort of still too many organizations kind of stuck in like, hey, we're going to give you some stuff and, you know, let's go make some magic. But if you don't have a way to bring people along the journey, as well as a way to figure out how do I capture the very best and then propagate it to everyone else? Like, I think you have a real challenge on your hands. Like one thing we're doing, which I'm pretty excited about, is we've got this new AI Spark Award where we're giving kind of outsized monetary bonuses to people when they bring forward something great, like a grassroots piece of field innovation where they've deployed agents, built agents that are fundamentally taking massive amounts of time out of how long it takes to do things, which, you know, is an incredible value to us and a value we can share with clients who expect us to be doing things more efficiently. Like, how do we bring that out of the dark and have a organizational muscle to be able to propagate that to the field and make sure everybody adopts that new way of working with a digital teammate to do things so much faster than we can if we do it the traditional manual way? Like, it's a journey, but it's one you got to be on. And if you're not investing the dollars on the people side of things, you are just going to continue to widen that capability overhang, I think.
Yeah, what are some of the, so this is an interesting place to go. You know, it's one of the challenges with conversations like this is it's very easy to kind of fall all the way into the hole of all the things that are challenging and what's not getting done.
But you guys are in a unique position of seeing that full spectrum of leaders to laggards. And so I'm interested to see for the organizations that are on the leading edge of that, you know, even the no one I think has this fully wrapped up. But for those organizations that are leading, what are some of the hallmarks? So for example, embracing it as a business transformation problem, not just a technology problem. One that you just brought up, Rob, is the idea of almost amplifying and holding up sort of decentralized innovation, incentivizing decentralized innovation. What are other kind of common patterns that you see among those organizations that you would consider leaders?
Well, I'll start. I'll let Rob pile on. I mean, we talked about leadership, the messaging from leadership, the permission to go and move forward, right? The organizations that I see leading, their CEOs are talking about it. Their executive teams are talking about it. They're leaned in. It's part of their objectives, measures, what have you. So, and then there's often some set of mandates that are going along with that that establish it. Typically, that comes with some type of a executive leader who's been taken offline to begin to take on that mission and enable it across the organization and can speak with authority across the organization. Not every organization is the same, but whatever is going to be required to overcome change barriers, that would be part of it. And you can't over-centralize because the further it get away from the field, the bigger the issues are. So you have to have the central gear that helps make things happen and share it across and also diffusion into the organization. And they need to really own it. That's the other thing is when you talk to an organization where the CEO has got a mandate and their management team, often then there's a bit of a noise gap in between that and the direct management. You can tell then when you go down into, I don't know, operations or finance or IT, when you talk to those folks, what are they saying? Are they also mirroring that same messaging? So that's a piece of it. They need to have access to both enterprise tools, you know, so something that spreads across, something that's being done for everyone with the idea of innovation at the edge. I really believe in that. And then the ability to then bring it back to the center with a path to production for those great ideas. Path to production is a really big problem, as you know, Nathaniel. That's why POC land ends up never really going anywhere, right? Recognition of the innovator's dilemma is an important one too, like that you've put some, that you are actually experimenting outside the direct P&Ls with new ideas. Those are a few. And then, of course, the trust guardrails, not just like governance programs, but like technology and other things that have been put into place that where you're working with the risk and legal and other folks that are going to be concerned and are paid to be concerned, putting them right in the middle, designed into the process. So those are a few things I'm seeing with the leading organizations. And I'm telling you, you'd be surprised how few organizations actually do that. But when you, the ones you're seeing like in the press and whatnot, that this is very much what you're seeing from them.
Yeah, maybe I'll just amplify a couple items. I mean, and that the point you made about leaders, Steve, is like just really pushing, the leaders have to push themselves really hard to be on the front foot here. I mean, I, you know, shameless plug for you, Nathaniel. Like, I listen to you every day because it's like, if I don't, I feel like I'm missing out. I will not be, you know, as educated as I need to be. And then I'm futzing around at home with this Mac Mini trying to get OpenClaw running. And I'm like, it's a train wreck because I have no clue what I'm doing. But, you know, I gotta be in it, right? And because then you can't talk to your real innovators. Like, you're so detached from it. And like, so as leaders, you have to feel it and just feel the power. And then it really gets you and you're really motivated and you realize that, boy, this is coming. It's the most transformative thing that's ever happened to our business, right? So that's one. And then I think then you're committed to the other thing that's really important, which is this is like, you have to invest. And so if like you're putting people in edge codes, you're taking them out, you're willing to forego revenue in the short term in order to build the models of the future. But if you're the kind of organization that the second results turn down just a little bit, it's like, okay, we need to cut back. And you cut back those programs. If those programs aren't sacred, you're in deep trouble because like this is so much bigger than a short-term budgetary cycle, right? It's like the future of your business. And if you don't understand that, then you are definitely going to get left behind.
I think the idea of leadership involving action and experimentation is a really different one, right? It hasn't been the case historically that leaders who are trying to make good decisions about, you know, whatever new CRM they're using have to go become experts in that thing. But I think that you're right. Yeah, almost something you said offhandedly, Rob, like hacking around with Mac Mini and OpenClaw. The point is not because you're going to deploy OpenClaw across the whole company. It's that you really, it's very hard to understand the edge of the capability set unless you've gone out and explored it. And, you know, it's also hard to know what the challenges are going to be. It's hard to really see how many new security challenges there are going to be for these things unless you've gone and played. And maybe let's bridge actually and jump off from OpenClaw. You know, we haven't kind of put a name to the big transition, but I think that if you were really trying to sum it up for someone who, I don't know, been in a coma for the last 4 months, the big difference between, call it, you know, October of last year and now is that agent capabilities really came online, right? The autonomy ambition of everyone has gone up because the most recent set of models plus the harnesses that we have to use them, Claude Code, Codex, OpenClaw, and things like that, have just made agents a viable thing now. And as part of that, it's almost like all the conversations that we were all having throughout last year about what agents were going to require in terms of data integration, in terms of systems integration, in terms of, you know, all these different things are now becoming real. What are you guys seeing in terms of how people or organizations are specifically evolving or having a hard time or challenges evolving to this sort of new set of agentic capabilities? Recognizing, of course, that for a lot of organizations, it's like they're still 0 to 1 in figuring out Copilot.
You didn't mention it, but Cowork was one of the, I mean, that specific thing has been so rattling because unlike Claude Code, for example, which might feel a little development-y, if you've never used something like that before, like Cowork's quite a bit easier to use. And I think that one was like, wait a second, it just got a lot easier. And then the capability stack, like it keeps rolling out new capabilities and roiling market, all that stuff going on. But so with that, you're seeing organizations move forward, but the amount of people who know how to bring that into your organization and do something with it and do it effectively, it's a tool that's been around for a very short period of time. It's the same with, you know, the capabilities that are in Gemini Enterprise, the new stuff that's coming out with Microsoft, et cetera. Especially for organizations that haven't already been doing a lot, Nathaniel, who didn't already ride the S-curve, they're sitting going, well, now how do I do something with this? There's a bunch of things I need to understand the technology. So I need to put technologists there who actually can help potentially. I need to understand the industry and I need to understand it functionally. And I need to be open to this much change, recognizing a new way of doing work that might not include the way I do the work, which is really hard for people mentally to get beyond.
And I think there was recently a lot of discussion. I think you talked about it, Nathaniel, like code review, for example. Like, you know, we're very used to SDLC and the traditional ways of doing it and the critical control of code review. And now, like, okay, you can actually, you know, have agentic code review and it speeds up your cycles. But like, how do you balance the trust aspects that you know, at an enterprise level? Like, you know, in my personal use, yeah, that's great. Like I can turn it loose, right? But if I'm using it in the enterprise, it's these like, you know, we've been doing it this way for 30, 40 years, you know, code review dying as a critical human function is like really hard to actually get an organization to say, you know, that's a good idea. So, I mean, I do think like you're constantly having to experiment, test, learn, and advance, but it's this like real knife's edge balance of, for enterprises of like, how do you overcome the trust gap as well to do things that are just so institutionalized in the core of where we as humans add value into the process?
I would say on that particular one, Rob, and I think it's a really great example. A lot of clients of ours right now, leaders, Nathaniel, we're working with them on this idea of that straight through from a requirements agent that like that's eliciting, like, what is it that we really want? Quick iteration all the way through to user experience testing as being like a full complete process that now wouldn't have looked like that at all in the past, right? So I actually don't need users to come in and do the test because I've already captured their context. And, you know, user experience just alone is a huge like burden on an organization, right? So, and then the idea that the context graph has the decisions in it, I can actually distribute decision-making deeper because the agents are going to understand what was it we were trying to do in a different way. And one of the things we talk sometimes about is working with digital natives and what can you learn from them. And I think organizationally, the org chart itself is starting to change because like it's sort of flattening because of where decisions can be taken. It's a fascinating time in business right now. So like how many technology things have we been involved with that have moved this fast with this much opportunity? And it also require organizations to rethink how they're built. right? And how they serve customers, what the experience might be like. It's excellent. It's such an interesting time right now.
One of the words that you used, Rob, that I think is worth dwelling on for a minute is trust. And there is obviously, as almost implicit in all of these changes, a renegotiation of trust inherent in the system. And I think there's a lot of dimensions of that. There's, you know, trust between management and individual contributors around their future. There's trust in new systems. You know, can the code review agent actually review code well enough to change? You know, Steve, this was something that you mentioned before as going to be a key theme this year. Let's speak a little bit more about that idea of what, you know, what the trust equation is part of AI transformation, you know, heading through the rest of this year.
Yeah. So maybe Steve, I'll start. I like the first part that you picked up on in particular, Nathaniel, which is that trust between the leaders of an organization and everyone in it, that, you know, we're in this together. We're on a journey. When I talked about the AI Spark Award earlier, that's trying to combat a trust problem that we have that today we measure by the billable hour in our business, right? But the billable hour needs to die. It is in a future-based world, like a future agentic world, it's an utterly irrelevant capture. Like human effort has no correlation really to value that we are going to deliver for clients. And so, but we need to build a bridge of trust with our people as we take them on a journey from what we're all used to for 125 years in our business, bill hours, to, hey, create value, leverage technology, leverage agentic solutions, be the, you know, be the agent boss who has an incredibly powerful army of digital teammates working for you to do things at an incredible pace with incredible quality to deliver value for our clients. Like that's a trust journey that is about the culture that you set in the organization. It's about the way you measure and reward, all those types of things. And then secondarily, and my colleague, Mr. Chase, is probably a little better equipped on, is just the actual trust of tools, how they get deployed, how do we, you know, not have those moments that we've seen in the press where people have used AI, but then have not appropriately had a human in the loop to notice that, hey, there's like factually incorrect stuff here that you just delivered as output, right? So that side, right, Steve, has to be ironclad as well. And we've done a whole lot around the trusted AI framework that we've built out around that.
Yeah, and I'd say just a couple of quick things. First off, I agree with what you said, Rob, but we're moving into a period, Nathaniel, where some new ideas are coming into the mix. Like, what is the control plane that actually is going to happen? Because we talked about some of the harnesses, but the agents actually in the organization are going to begin to move outside those harnesses, right? Like, they're going to be working with each other in their different ones. And the technology hasn't caught up with actually what that control plane is exactly going to look like. We have a lot of ideas. We know that there's some issues. I need observability. I need to be thinking through the identity question, inherited, and those agents as they inherit permissions or they've been given the direct permissions and how I manage those. The whole idea about how I'm going to onboard those and offboard those and having those answers and knowing what your expectations are in your trusted governance and what have you, knowing what your evals are going to be before you're ready for semi-autonomous and where you want the human in the loop to be in, et cetera. That's all the work that we're doing with companies to figure out how they're going to move forward into this. And as you do that, you build the trust of the organization also that you know what you're doing as you move forward. We're not ready for inside most large enterprises, fully autonomous systems, right? Like that's, I don't know when we're going to be, but that's not likely to be the case. And I wouldn't really want to work with a company that was fully autonomous right now either, that, at least not for where our risk profile would be. And recognizing that trust, I need to, with my third parties, I need to be able to trust them. And so we're spending a lot of time on the assurance of that trust as well, because if I begin to work with you and your agents, I want to know that I can trust what's going to happen in that interaction and what have you. So anyway, I think there's a lot left to be done here. Really interesting time. Identity being one of those really interesting topics, right? Like, because, you know, right now a lot of organizations, you know, you think, well, I'll give it a human-like identity. Well, we pay on a lot of consumption basis. Like, what's the cost of doing something like that? We haven't talked about like token economics and some of the other pieces there, but that's sort of in your trust domain is I don't need to spend more for agents than I would have for people to have done the same thing. That doesn't make any sense. So a lot of piece parts wrapped up in there, Nathaniel.
Yeah, I would say one thing that should be, I think, challenging, but also a little relieving is that while there is this capabilities overhang for everyone, and while there are, you know, certain types of users that are way ahead of, call it the average enterprise user, big domains of what you were just talking about are not figured out for anyone, right? Like every day you can go on X and find Andre Carpathy and the most advanced leaders and builders of AI debating what the control plane for agents is going to look like. These are unsolved questions, right? And so that's a challenge because you can't just take a best practice and put it into play. But it is, I think, a little relieving that, you know, it's not like everyone has everything figured out and there's just some set that's behind.
But what I think you have to take away from that, Nathaniel, is but you don't get to sit it out and wait for it, right? Like, it's just, there's too much value in the things you can do. So the fact that not everything's figured out can't be your answer to, I'm not going to move forward. And find your trusted partners. I mean, that's the stuff that we're building into our tax platform, into our audit platforms, right? And so that our clients can come on there and be able to get that benefit in that domain area that might not be on their on the first thing that they're going to get to as well. So, you know, you got to have a robust ecosystem of partners you're working with that are figuring out parts of this as well.
Yeah, Steve, I love that point. Just, you know, our clients, as they're pouring money into AI, they're generally wanting to do it at the core of their business, right? The front of the house, what they make, what they sell. And then, like for us at KPMG, we're seeing a huge opportunity, right? Risk, finance, compliance, tax, how we do audits, like all of that. You said like that space is really ours to own, is kind of been our point of view. And any client says like, hey, I can either make that investment myself or you, KPMG, a long and trusted big four brand. If you're doing that, boy, and you can do it, take down costs for me, bring me more value, do it better than it's ever done before. Because instead of looking at a sample, you can have agents look at a whole population and do it at lower cost. Like, that's a home run. So that's really been a big part of our focus, right? Is figuring out like where in the value chain can we be incredibly powerful and really lean into that so that others can look to us and say, yeah, like trusted ability to do risk, finance, all these other things, right? But that is a really, really sweet spot for us.
And the way every organization needs to think about their opportunity in this moment, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, I think that in general, there's the balance of viewing this as a problem to be solved versus an opportunity to be harnessed is a little misaligned. And I understand why it is, but I think it is certainly the case. My guess is that if you interviewed all of the organizations that you would consider leaders, they are leaning into the opportunity that this represents, not just sort of viewing it as a thing that they got to get through. You know, this is the first episode of this season. And we've already, I think, done a pretty broad survey of a lot of the key topics that are going to be recurring throughout. But as we wrap up, what are some of the sort of flags flags you want to plant as things that organizations need to be considering that we need to be talking about on this show? You know, we've talked about trust, but, you know, cyber, security, you know, what are the other kind of big areas that are big and blinking as we move deeper into 2026?
You want to go first, Rob?
Yeah, maybe I'll just say a couple things. So, if you're not sure if you're moving fast enough, I think you should feel comfortable that you're not moving fast enough, I would say would be, you know, on the front of it, right? And, you know, where do you want to be? You know, you really have a decision to make there. I mean, you can wait and see what someone else does and try to be a fast follower. It is actually maybe a little easier to be a fast follower because the technology allows you to go fast. But like, what does an iconic brand look like in the future, right? You know, it's probably the one that in a lot of cases got out first by completely rethinking its business model and providing service to clients and customers in a completely different way. So I would just say innovation and speed, it's just got to become an absolute muscle that you're flexing every day.
So maybe I'll pick up on that. So a couple of extra ones that we hadn't hit. We really didn't delve so far into the workforce implications of this, the new roles, the way org charts are going to change. I think, well, that's a question we're getting tremendously. People want to also know what's the size and the shape and who should I be hiring? How should I be? What's going to happen to workforce? You know, we have an abundance mentality around that, which says we haven't thought through what all the new jobs are going to be on the other side, just like we didn't know after many of our technology revolutions what it was going to be. I know there's competing theories on that, but I'm really bullish on American work and broadly work in general and what's coming on the other side of this. I certainly believe leading organizations are going to go through tremendous growth as well. So it might shift around. There's some disruption that can cause regulation, Nathaniel. We haven't talked a lot about where regulation is going, how to react to that, make flexible, which is going to be my other point, which is adaptability. We're finding that organizations that have a higher degree of adaptability are going to be much more successful, especially because AI is going to unlock change in all kinds of other places, biotech and manufacturing and things like space economies. Like it's just going to unlock all these other things. And organizations are going to be faced with more change than they ever have, need to be more adaptable. So there's that. This idea of control plane, identity, like how agents are going to work, what's the experience layer going to be? We're spending a lot of time on research on that. We're working with clients on that too. So, you know, we hit those a little bit, but I think that we'll probably need to go a little bit deeper this year. There's a ton of research, a ton of dollars going into thinking about that. So my guess is it's going to start moving really fast too. So there's a couple of signposts for me, Nathaniel. Workforce is probably the one that is going to end up being the hardest, because in there is adoption and adaptability and all the things that come with it. And I think if everything stopped right now, the capability is so good, we could make tremendous change and it won't stop. And so diffusion, or how it gets into organizations and the pace it does and into industries, is going to be the hallmark. Is that going to be 5 years? Is it going to be 10 years? Is it going to be 2 years? Right? I don't think we know.
Listen, I think there's so much to dive into. I'm peeling myself back for the sake of time on this one, but I think there's a really great starting point. All of these things are going to be sort of the substance of the rest of this season. So thanks, Steve and Rob, for kicking us off.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.